This is Nancy Ma. I am here with Maya Reed at Maya's house in Hudson, New York. It is June 27th, 2016, and this is part of Oral History Summer School, the archive project for the city. Can I ask you to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Maya Reed. I am a Hudson resident of 15 years now, almost to the day. And that's who I am, basically. Should I continue, or do you have some questions you'd like to ask me?
I want to talk about whatever you want to talk about.
Yeah. I think when I say that I've been here for 15 years, it kind of blows my mind that it's been that long, because it seemed a very short time ago that I was making a decision to move and that I happened upon this town and felt right away like this would be a great place to live. I think I'd like to move here with my family. And it just seems like every day you're doing something, and then when you finally stop and look back and you count the number of years, it's like, how could 15 years have passed? So it's been a really interesting, a lot has happened in 15 years. Watching a community, because I feel like I've always come in with, I came in with new eyes 15 years ago, and I feel like I'm always looking through new eyes at this community, because something new seems to come around that changes maybe what you thought you knew about a place, or the changes are very slow, and then all of a sudden changes happened. So it's forever interesting. So it's been a significant place to live for 15 years, and I'm at a place where I wonder if this is going to be where I end up being for the next part of my life, or if it's time to change, because I feel like the communities I've lived in have almost been sort of in 15-year increments, maybe a little less, a little more. So that's where I'm at with this community. A lot has changed since I came here, that makes me wonder if it's a good fit for me anymore. I feel like the town has definitely come alive, and I'm really glad for the town that all of a sudden it's very much thriving and bustling. Because I have lived in a few Hudson River cities, well, two, for big pieces of time, and I grew up living near one of them and know that they were empty ghost towns. And that over the past couple of decades, people have slowly been gravitating to them and joining long-term residents who have managed to stay through the 70s and 80s when the towns seemed to have emptied out. So I think I've lost my train of thought.
I'm tracking with you.
Are you? Okay, yeah. I'm trying to go back to that spot where sort of I lost my train of thought. So I guess living in these, can you remember what I was, what I was talking about?
Yeah, you spoke about living in cities for 15-year increments.
Right, exactly.
And you've been in other
Neighborhoods. Right, yeah. Oh, and so just sort of watching these cities that had been abandoned, that were very much ghost towns, that were very much boarded up. Even though I didn't see Hudson as this, I have a reference to Peekskill, New York. So it's really great to see businesses thriving and people in the streets and things like that. And I think that what has been a little disconcerting now in time is that what that revitalization seems to be is very much around economics and money. And so, and it's happened so quickly that all of a sudden this pace that seemed to be sort of happening and building was sort of like a living, breathing pace. And then all of a sudden it just seems like this huge wave came in, and all of a sudden things have changed dramatically. And knowing myself, if I had not had the opportunity to buy a home here, I wouldn't be able to afford to live here. And part of that, was why I came here, is that it was a town that was interesting, and it was a town that I could afford to move to and live and raise my children. And so I see that changing, and I know people who are really struggling, people I've known for a long time, looking for apartments that they can afford, and realizing that although there are a lot of things opening up in this community in terms of shops and stores, it's for a very specific economic group. And so people who are lower or living in poverty or even middle income, there are very few places for that economic demographic to access restaurants. There are no grocery stores still, which is very surprising to me. And those things that actually make a community not just a place for tourists and visitors, but a town that supports the people who are here day to day, living, making a life here. And so I'm interested in that phenomenon, and I'm frustrated by it because I feel like it makes it hard to live here. And I think it's made it hard to live here for a long time. And I'm sort of curious about the fact that those issues are not addressed by whoever is responsible for initiating those conversations in a small city, in a small community, or and everybody I know of who lives here, we always talk about the fact there's no grocery store, or the restaurants are really delicious and great, but they're not really affordable for some of us. So where are those places? So I'm interested in how this change has happened and what the components of it are, and yeah, and I'm curious about the longevity of it too. I'm not in the sustainability of businesses that depend on people from a higher economic bracket as support. So they're sort of big questions as well as questions that affect me and neighbors and people in the community on a day-to-day basis. But I also, because of the struggle, have been forced to really look at what supports me here, and and why I stay. So, and I think it still is a community of so many different people, that I can be one person in a community of many. And that has always been a place I've preferred to be, is that kind of those surroundings that have been important for me as landing places and living places. and the stories that people can bring to the table that express such a variety of experiences. And I think that we always have to remember that we all bring different stories to the table. It's an important thing. And it's a beautiful part of the world, and I really love that it is a city, and it also feels like an intimate town. You can live very quietly here, but you can also step out and just know people and engage very socially. So I don't imagine, I have a hard time imagining where else I would find that, because in a way it suits me very well. And one of the other things about living here that I have suddenly found that I'm really considering is the fact that my parents are aging, and I've begun having conversations with them about when they get to a point, maybe a decade from now, maybe sooner, and they need a little more care, would they come and live with me? And so again, this not only does my home support that, but this community supports that in terms of the services they offer senior citizens, and the fact that you're close to a train that can take you to New York City, or, you know, but it, so there are lots of things that support, I think, being an older person here. So that is making me consider just calming down and really, really almost renewing my relationship with my community and understanding how I'm connected to it, because my connection is different now. So it's been an interesting few years of feeling like I knew very much why I was here, and carving a niche and knowing what I was doing here, and then suddenly being unsure, but being held here, and yeah. So these are sort of, I'm just feel like I'm talking very generically about sort of a strange time in life that I found myself in, that's without clarity a little bit, and unknown, and how does place maybe support you as you're asking those questions, and how does place reflect who you are, or again not, and how do you listen, how do you get quiet in your place, and let it kind of tell you, you know, who you are here.
So where do you see your place right now in this community?
I see my place right now as being quiet and listening. I feel listening and revisiting areas of interest that I've always had, that I stepped away from, and stepping in maybe a new way. So, for example, when I was here, in my earlier years here, I was working with youth in the community through an organization in town called Time and Space Limited. I was the director of youth programming and a facilitator, and it was an amazing opportunity that I had to do that work. And And my children were also, so I was working with school-age children, mostly middle school, and my children were in school, middle school, high school, similar age group. And so not only was I working with children, but in a school district, but my own children were. So as a parent as well as an educator. And there were a lot of things that were happening that were disturbing around sort of children and families experiencing things that were considered racist acts and by the school, just sort of treating certain children differently. And it did come down to economics slash race, you know, because other children weren't treated like that, who were sort of more middle class and white, and it was very hard not to see it and not to feel impacted and not to, and so I would go to Board of Ed meetings, and I felt like there were places people were butting heads. The community who is standing up for the rights of these families and children were butting heads against administration and teachers and being considered troublemakers and agitators. And it was just, it felt very combative. And it didn't feel like things were getting done. And so I had stepped away for a number of years because it was seemed very frustrating, and it felt just like if I put my concentration into the work and being with the children and the families, at least good things were happening and solid relationships were happening. And so I've just recently decided I'm going to go start just attending Board of Ed meetings this year. Just go. I'm just going to go and listen. There are new people involved as board members. There are new administrators in the district. And just sort of take on the position of listening and trying to understand what the picture is, without feeling like I necessarily have a place in it, I don't have an agenda, to just understand. And then see if there are places for dialogue. It's just sort of understand the organism in a way that I wasn't able to do when I was here first. And so I'm sort of revisiting things that I thought I knew. And those are things that have come about. The reason I'm doing it is I feel like I have changed tremendously. Between the time I was doing that one job and where I am now through my own studies and my own work. And I'm studying education, and I'm studying a form of education that is incredibly democratic and is very inspiring because it's not from this, it didn't originate in this country, but it's heralded internationally. And one of the things that really impressed me is that they speak about teaching and education is political, and teaching and education is emotional. And I feel like those are things that we have often, as a culture, banished from what education is. Well, it can't be political. Can't be emotional, you know, like it's more pragmatic, more practical. And I feel like, yeah, that's what our society, that's how we see ourselves, maybe culturally. And so I just was so excited to bump into an approach to education that came out of a community that was initiated by parents. That is supported by a municipality where parents have a voice politically in the municipality, where people who are most vulnerable have priority in this public system. And so it just sort of represented this, to me, that community, parents, community, and education systems and municipal systems all can work together. And that there can be dialogue and respect, and that in that coming together, we all are supporting children, and we all are recognizing and supporting people who are going to be citizens, who are going to become adult citizens in our communities, and that really making that a priority, that it can work. And so I just keep thinking, we live in this tiny community. Can't we do that? Can't we somehow knock down these walls of division between, well, that school, well, that city, well, I don't have children in school, well, I have children in school. Like, what about the fact that as adults, we're all responsible for the care of children who live here and who make this a home, you know, we all are. And that it's not just the school's responsibility, it's not just the parents' responsibility. And so I think that I'm at this point very passionate about the potential that exists, because it does exist. It's not just theory, it's practiced, and it grows and it develops and it takes on new incoming elements that are going to shift now what the community looks like in this Italian town, city. And so they're not like, oh no, something new has just come in, it's going to disrupt everything. They embrace it. They say, okay, how will it influence us? What will we learn as we adjust and welcome this new influence into the community? And so anyway, I'm so curious if there's a way of breaking down the divisions, you know? And so I feel like I'm really trying to be a listener in the community, because I feel like, and I've had conversations with many people who've lived here a very long time, or not so long, is that there are so many islands in Hudson, and it's just sometimes the conversations do flow from island to island, and very often they don't, and I think things are changing for sure, and I think I'd like to see more, and so that's sort of my interest. And I don't know what my place is in community now. My work is not as a my place is in communities change very much because I'm not working with a population like I was, like of children, of youth in Hudson. I'm just curious about, is there a place suddenly where I'll be working with community again? Because I feel like that is always something I have done, and I don't think I'm looking for it because it's something I've always done. It's just I'm always compelled to be working in community, and I feel like I have been on sabbatical. But I'm also working with a different age group now. I'm working with infants to toddlers. That's like a very it's very much where my interest is and my passion. I'm learning. I'm very much a learner. But it's really making me think and ask questions. And And so I wonder where that place might be, you know. And is it, and I ask myself, am I, is it being an educator? Is it being someone who's connected to policy or advocacy, or and what are there jobs around policy and advocacy for very young children and family that align with how I'm thinking and seeing? So I keep looking, so I equate it very much to when I'm making art, is that if I'm really, it's not about my ideas, it's about a dialogue that I'm having with something that's not just me, and I'm moving things around and I'm saying, well, is that, nah, it's not quite, something's not quite right, something, let me bring this other element in. And then when it, all of a sudden things fall into place. And I feel like right now, my, that's what it continues to be. I haven't, things haven't all dropped into place. And so I'm looking and I'm listening and I'm feeling and I'm, you know, wondering. What it might look like in 5 years. Me here. You know. So that's. I feel like that just summed up like something. It closed a thought.
Yeah, no, you touch on a lot of things there. I'm processing through a lot of meat that you gave me. You speak of this dialogue you really want to create and this listening that you want to give. And I'm wondering, how the community feels about that.
That is a really good question because I don't know. The places that I have begun having, that I've begun having these conversations, are primarily with other educators who are working sort of on the edge, the periphery of standard public education. And so I'm having conversations with people who are asking themselves these, who are asking questions about their approaches or methodologies, critiquing, you know, what they're doing, are in a very creative place with education. And so that question is, how do you begin expanding that conversation? And I feel like there are a lot of us, but we are on the edges. And so, what is our voice? And I think that's it. That's the question. When I going to the board meetings, of Ed, Board of Ed meetings this year, I've seen some really good steps being taken around sort of approaches to curriculum that are not excluding students because they're so narrow, but are thinking about these ideas of manipulatives even in high school, and are thinking about the fact that they're offering these similar manipulatives to kids in first grade, so that it's a, something that will continue as a vocabulary for those students through their life of math, you know. So I feel like they're definitely taking on things and they're having realizations about bettering their practices. But I also realize that I go and I'm like, but it's not creative. Like, they're almost like, that world is an isolated world, the world of public education. And there are so many mandates and so many expectations, and people are scrambling to make sure that they're doing all the things, that they're meeting requirements that the state and the feds have. And there's just no room to actually, as a professional teacher, be treated as someone who is capable and creative and can really take on learning, teaching students. I feel like I look at it and I have developed an incredible respect for, not that I didn't ever have respect, but even more so, it just seems like a world where I would have a very hard time being a teacher because of the constraints and the fact that there wouldn't be the place or the time to proceed as I would feel I might need to or want to with students. And it's very, that world is so dissimilar from the conversations and the readings that are happening with this cohort of people who are doing sort of alternative or other modes of education. And so I'm not sure how alternative can influence and support or be interesting. Like, can public education look to actually very incredible approaches for students, and can they say, we want that, we want to be able to do that and be able to take control, because they're so controlled by things that are so much bigger than them and laws and rules.
So when your kids were growing up here, was that something you encountered?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in terms of, well, it's been changing. I think right now it's gotten particularly bad, and my children were just getting out of school by the time the testing started getting incredibly intense. And so my last child was really starting to be impacted by it, where the ones before weren't as heavily impacted.
Yeah, how did it impact your last child?
School was not a place he felt he belonged, at all. It continues to now. The conversations that we have are like, but who's in control of this train? Like, this is, to me as a learner, this is how I want to be able to learn. And I'm not being allowed, there are all these roadblocks, and I'm having to conform to something that doesn't make sense to me, because I can't bring my interest into it, because I just need to study and do this and pass this test, to get my diploma.
You think that was a sentiment the community felt?
I think people in the community, I think that there are so many different kinds of learners, but also what I'm hearing from parents and beginning to hear in the county, at least, because that's all I can speak to, is that there is so much concern about the tests and what it's doing to teachers and children and learning and education, and that more and more parents are opting out or refusing the tests more and more. And some teachers are beginning to stand up and speak out about the detrimental effects of this approach to education. And it's so interesting because there are so many places where they're doing the opposite, and students are really being, and teachers are being supported as educators and learners, and the environments are much more humane, and the circumstances are much more humane. And I just see this pace, and I'm just like, to what end? To what end? Why are we doing it this way? What will we end up with? Because we're not supporting it at a sort of, to me, a humane level. We're not really considering the well-being of the humans, you know, involved. You know, and I have memories of my own. I did not like school from first grade on, and I couldn't wait to be out of it. So, you know.
Can you tell me more about that?
I think there was a lot about all of a sudden going from how all of a sudden you were having to conform to a structure that was very unnatural to a six-year-old. So you went from kindergarten, the kindergarten room and experience, and at that time, some people went to preschool, but very few did. A lot of people stayed home until kindergarten. And so kindergarten was this first school experience, and it was half day. And there was a flow to it that was totally in keeping with children of that age and development and what, you know, and where children were. And then all of a sudden the first grade classroom changed dramatically. You know, all of a sudden you were conforming and you're having to do this.
And where was this?
This was down in Westchester County, in Mamaroneck, New York. Where I first started school, and I went through a few different schools. There was one elementary school that I was in for 2 years, that when I look back on it, those years felt the most kindred. My time in school seemed like it merged more with my own personal life. I always felt that my life not in school was my personal life, and then when I went to school, I just was like, I wasn't me, or I couldn't be me, so I just did what I had to do, and then I was out, and yay, I could go back to being me. And I think that that's not a unique experience. I think there are lots of children who feel that, not every child. Some people worked very well in the structure that school has provided, but I think there are a lot of children who don't. So I, you know, I bring that to how I look at approaches and pedagogies of education, is what seems to support the child, so all children, not the generic child, but that each is an individual, and that you can create systems that allow movement to happen. And really trust that the children are bringing something to the table, a desire and interest in learning. That's they do. And so if you sort of engage very early on with respect to that child is really here and wants to learn, but it's not going to be necessarily your way and you putting information into their heads, but how do you follow the child? So I feel like a lot of what I've been learning through my current work with infants through their toddler years is, how do I actually follow the child? How do I step back in an engaged way and observe. I'm doing a lot with documentation and photographing. And it's not just what are they doing, but it's like, what is the expression or what thing did they particularly notice? And how do you support that? And how do you help them pursue that, maybe? You know, like, what is that thing? And so I think that children can be very, they're just engaged learners. And if you as an adult can step back and can understand who is who and how do you sort of bring people together in ways where they're co-learners and group learners, or they need to step away and be independent learners. It takes a lot of work as a teacher to do that, but it's also incredibly exciting because you're always a researcher. Every day, every moment with that child is fascinating, because you're really observing another body and mind at work and how it informs you and you becoming a learner. What I have learned through my time, I feel like I've become such a better learner because how I'm inquiring I feel like I'm looking at everything new and fresh and saying, well, I think I know all about that, but actually I don't know all about that. And so, you know, that expectation of knowing and learning and owning it, it's like, but actually there's always an exception to knowing everything. You don't know everything. And so, like, there's something beautiful about just saying, I have something to learn as a teacher. And so anyway, I think, and I know, because there are places where this is how education is approached and supported and carried out. And it is very engaging, and teachers have to work together, and they're very much valued as professionals with special abilities, you know. And they're allowed to collaborate and to question and to develop very unique things and very unique classrooms and very unique journeys in seeking knowledge.
Are there places like that in Hudson?
There are places like that in Hudson. So most of them would be early childhood spaces. So there's a really beautiful Montessori school on 7th Street that is very much that. And there is a facility down by the river called Kite's Nest, and that's for older children, I think elementary through high school. And they very much are engaging and asking themselves and reevaluating and developing their continually, constantly, their curriculum and their and what they're going to offer and how they offer and where they can make, how they can modify or change, or, you know, they're active researchers and questioners and developers. So, yeah.
Have those two places changed, even in the dynamics of children or the youth in this community? I mean, those are two schools mm-hmm. in this community.
Right. They're two schools, and they definitely, what I can only speak to the fact that I've observed the children and in those spaces very much owning their spaces, being encouraged to own those spaces and the activities in those spaces, and that the parents are engaged as co-supporters of the children by the educators.
So are these open to everyone in the community?
They're so the Montessori school there, it's a private school and there's tuition, and I believe Kite's Nest has sliding scale, so yes, they have to fund, but they try to be accessible to everybody, and I know that that's an ongoing thing where they're just trying to find ways to reach out into the community and be more open and more available and more able to have anybody who wants to be in their school, and Kite's Nest is supporting the home school communities. They come in and use what Kite's Nest has to offer a lot, but and through, I think, after school programming and the teen programming, they're definitely getting more students from Hudson proper versus outlying areas. So yeah, but you know, those are a few instances. Across the river, there's a very beautiful preschool also, that, again, the director there is always inquiring, and these people are all a part of this sort of alliance of educators, where we get together and we are asking questions and we are sounding boards for one another, and we're all very much creating and culling from different places those things that we want to bring into our practice as educators. There's a new school that just started, again in Catskill, that was started as a family collaborative, and they have, in a year's time, of parents who wanted to start a school, started a school where they have found two teachers that fit into their environment, which is really great. So I feel like there is a lot, but how can it be affordable? And these are the questions. They're the questions I ask too. Is that how can you provide something that is not typical public education? How can you provide it to a community in the way that public education is available, and its funding? How do you do that? But I think that these are also bigger, like, national questions. Like, how are we going to support families around educational choice and care of children? And I'm curious about can we lend our voice to that conversation? Again, I don't know. Is it too big? You know? Or is there a way to penetrate and be a part of that conversation? Because we're all doing the work. And to me, that which used to be sort of on the side is now like garnering more attention and more interest by the general public. More and more people are looking to Montessori's and Waldorf schools. Those aren't just like you're part of that world. More people are aware of it. More people are saying, that's where I want my child to go. Is it Reggio inspired, which is the approach that I've been studying? And what are the things about these alternative approaches to education? There's something about them. And people who maybe 10 years ago would have said, oh, I'm going to send my child to public school because I believe in that and we're going to make it work, are saying, I cannot put my child into that environment. I can't risk it. You know, and I have known people who have put their children in kindergarten and their child was so unhappy in kindergarten that they were pulling their child out of kindergarten in public schools. The pressure is great because testing begins in first grade, so a kindergarten teacher has to probably do a lot of things that my kindergarten teacher didn't even have to think about, because there was no test in first grade, you know, that a child had to perform well on. That the district was depending on children doing well on, you know. So there's just like that kind of pre. So anyway, I'm just curious. This is a really, this is such a big time around children and families and education, and I'm just, you know, I would love to be able to do what I could do for not just people who can afford to pay me. You know, I would, how do I make what I do accessible? And it's economics, you know, that get in the way. So what about subsidies for families that would help them pay? You know, what about these things? How are we looking at that? And I know that there are conversations about subsidizing early child education to support that human being developing in a healthy way so that at the other end of the spectrum, when they're adults, maybe they're going, you know, homelessness and incarceration and all of these things that plague, that are plaguing and weighing us down, in terms of cost. If you're looking at the economics of it, what if you are investing in the well-being of the human being from, you know, pre-birth, you know? And what would that look like on the other end when they're adults in the world? Because as a society, we've put the care into that, into families and children. So I don't know how it fits into me and Hudson, but I feel like it's a question that I'm asking myself, and I'm continuing to be in conversations with other educators, and I'm continuing to read, and I'm thinking, and I'm writing ideas down, and I'm all of a sudden I'm like writing because I'm not a writer, but it seems the best way to kind of grapple with these questions is to see what is the question and what are my thoughts around that question and what are possible solutions or other directions I could go with that question. And maybe I'm going to find an answer. Maybe I'll find something that brings it together. So all of a sudden I feel like I'm working in another medium and it's a brand new medium, but it's kind of exciting because I've never like really engaged in that way with words as a way of thinking. You know, it's always been sort of quiet in my head. But and then how do you have those conversations? And I don't know yet how to have those conversations with people who are not kind of thinking and asking those similar kinds of questions. And I think, you know, that's why I go to the Board of Ed. What is education? What's happening? What are they thinking? How could I? And I feel like some, the times that I've engaged in conversation little bits, I'm like, oh my God, we're speaking a really, really different language. And how do I kind of express that I actually have something to offer that you might be interested in listening to? You know, how do you become known as you're getting to know? How do you, so you're trying to get to know somebody and you're there and you're listening and you're watching and you're putting pieces together and you're forming ideas. But how do you bring your voice into that conversation when you're not being asked also? But you have a sense that you'd like to have a conversation because you're in the same world.
Have you've had these conversations at the Board of Ed?
I've had little side conversations walking down a hallway with somebody who was on the board where something was mentioned, and as we're walking down the hall, I would be like, oh, that sounded really interesting. Could you tell me more about that? You know, or I would love to continue to know how that develops, you know, sort of thing. But there isn't what is it? The chemistry, you know. I feel like I'm part of the general public, you know. So I'm sort of trying to figure out like that way of how do I approach it? What's the way of engaging that might pique some interest in a conversation? So that's good.
Yeah, it's the beginning.
Very much, I feel like it's very much a beginning. I think it would be a beginning, and I'm very interested to see because it's happening in places. I was just in St. Louis and visited a Montessori school that's a charter school, and it started out as like one class in a basement room of a church, and then it was the three grades together, and then they started getting bigger, and so they expanded, and now they had like this warehouse and an architect design this incredible school that is preschool through eighth grade. And you start in kindergarten. You can start in preschool, but you start in kindergarten and you move through that school. And they're doing incredible things, and people are moving to the neighborhood to be in the school. And of course, it's changing the nature of the neighborhood because that neighborhood sounded a lot like what Hudson is. It's in a big city. That neighborhood probably was 2 square miles. It had the diversity that Hudson has, and now all of a sudden, people are moving into the neighborhood, and prices are going up, and the nature of the neighborhood is changing. People are not able to afford living there anymore and are moving out. So it was really interesting to go and visit this school in this neighborhood that's grappling with the issues. I think that it seems Hudson is grappling with, but their school is amazing, and it just sort of shows that. And it is a public school, it's a charter. So, and they're getting involved in housing policy because they're seeing their neighborhood and the community that they have committed to serve, which is a multi-economic community. They made a commitment to that community, and now they're seeing people in the lower economic realm being pushed out. And they're like, okay, here's the deal. We're getting involved in city poli housing policy. And they sat down with the architect in the city, and they figured out that this many fancy houses that you're building, this many need to be affordable housing. And they got an agreement that this many affordable houses would be built, you know, to every however many expensive ones. So they're stepping into the political arena, and that was really exciting to me. They're defending their community, they're defending their families, and they're defending their children. And they're starting to put to. So anyway, they're really looking at who are we as a. We're Montessori, but we're public school. We're growing. What does this mean on the bigger scheme of things? Are there others, you know, so how do we take on a leadership in this, as a way of supporting other schools and other communities in our own city that is a disaster zone educationally, and then also like as part of the national conversation. So I mean, it can be done. It definitely can be done, and it can be done on this scale. We'll see. We'll keep plugging along.
No, I love your passion about education, and you've been in very different roles in your relation to education.
Yeah.
Whether it's being a parent or being an educator at the youth.
The youth, yeah, the community center, art center.
Community center. Mm-hmm. And then now working with toddlers.
Yeah. Definitely. I feel like I've had the opportunity to see and experience a lot and think. I feel like I've been, it has absolutely made me think in a way of how do we write this? You know, I see imbalances and I feel imbalances. And for me, it's, for me, the biggest imbalance is like what is the economic piece, is that if you can afford something, then you have a lot of choice. Or if a community arts organization or an alternative like Kite's Nest is able to pull together the funding that would offer people without the tuition opportunity to be a part of the program can provide scholarships or sliding scale. So a lot of, so organizations are having to scramble to find, but, and, you know, or you just, you're able to afford it and you do, and I understand why. But it should be available to everybody. Not one child should be lacking in quality of care. Not one. So.
Yeah, I follow that. I want to honor your time. So if there's anything else you want to talk about, share.
So I think I'm going to just say that even though I'm having a bit of an identity crisis in Hudson, it's a good place to be a little confused. And I think in speaking with you, I really have been very fortunate in terms of having come here and having come here when I did. And I've had incredible opportunities, and I have been given so much to see and feel, that I feel like these are the resources for me to moving forward, and it's holding me. It's a place that still holds me, and I'm really grateful for that. And I'm grateful that you asked to interview me.
No, I'm thank you for taking the time to share your life, your passions. It's really important.
Thank you, Nancy.
Thank you. Thank you, Maya.